Ingrid says that it's a very hard act to follow. And I'm actually going to be presenting some data that I've put together quite recently, which will make you think about our career paths and how females have been exposed at an early age to, and it's not so surprising that there are not so many that make it into the science and engineering field. Well, interest in the natural sciences actually occurs really early in childhood, and it's likely somewhat culturally biased. You know, boys and dirt are pretty compatible. And, you know, the stereotype is, of course, with girls playing with dolls. The ability to learn how to deal with spatial things is learned early by boys because of the types of toys that they play with compared to what girls play with. And if you look at the top toys in 2012, the girls are all things that are make you socialize. They help you interact with people. But one of the things that's really cool that I found was in the top 10, several of them are tablets. So, and none of the boys, which are all, you know, three of them are Legos, but none of them are computers. So the girls have got the edge up. And things may change. These are the big toys for boys and girls. And I, from my earliest days in the lab, have realized that the guys like their toys. And this is what really stimulated me to do this analysis and also to question, is it really true? Do more males than females ask for big toys? And I still haven't totally got that answer. I've been trying to get it. But again, look at the computer data that's just come out on the iPad. The number of females that own an iPad now outnumbers the number of males. So that's kind of cool. So in order to have a successful career in science, you have to have a whole bunch of skills. You heard of some of them from Julie. And I've kind of put together a table. And some of those skills are actually now known to be gender different. For example, the willingness to take risk. They've actually found a gene that maps to that. And it's, of course, more prevalent in males than it is in females. Multitasking, that's also known to be gender, and there's several good publications on that, and females do it far better than males. And the very last one, the dissemination one, that the ability to get out there and disseminate is a little bit more on the male side, and that's where we can certainly do more work to get there. Many of the other things that are involved in research, no one's really looked at the issue of gender in any serious way. And so there's lots out there that's yet to be done. Now, just for fun, I wanted to question the whole issue of stereotypes in household tasks. So I'm going to give you some ideas of, okay, now this is how much Stats Canada says that a male does for housekeeping. And this is how much a male does for household repair. These are hours per day. And for shopping? Two. It's because they're shopping on the web. So how many hours per day does it? It's not that different. We're a little less. Don't like to fix our leaky faucets. It's almost equal. So even though I'm going to be talking about this Lego versus doll thing, you have to be a bit careful in terms of stereotypes. Now, just to give you some orientation for people in the room that aren't familiar with how we get money to do research, we have three different kinds of funding, and I'm actually just going to talk about the operating funds and the infrastructure funds. The operating funds pays for the equipment, not the little tiny things, the test tubes, the chemicals, things like that, and salaries for our students, our technicians. The infrastructure pays for the toys, the big toys. And the first two are variable in amount because it really depends on how much you ask for in terms of how much you'll end up getting. And I've, based on ask, now this is not how much was actually awarded, this is just on the ask. You can see at the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, females are predominantly asking for money to do research in the health systems, the social and cultural population type studies, and clinical research. Very few of them are asking for money to do work in the biomedical, which is sort of really the mathematical base, wet bench base. And in fact, 50% of all females now submitting to the Canadian Institutes of Health Research over the last 3 years have submitted to the first three categories, where only 24% of the males are. So there's a clear difference in terms of the preference, and the females going along with the dolls like the more social side. Okay, how much money did they ask for? I normalized to 100 as 100 being what a male asks for. Females always ask for less. They perceive they need less. And this just shows in, this is the number, and then the amount of money that they're asking for. And the red is females, and this is since 2007. And as you can see, females are always asking for less. Even in the areas that they really love. So in the clinical, it's almost equal. They're the most equivalent. But in the biomedical, the more mathematical, there are very few females asking, but they're almost asking for the same amount as the males are. For NSERC, and you'll hear more from the head of NSERC herself, not too much later on in today's session. Again, the data is very interesting because females are liking the agricultural biological side of science. So 30% of the grants are in that area, compared to 17% for math and 14% for engineering. So again, it's that dolls. And it's kind of, you know, the bars are so far apart, but the success rates are actually pretty similar. You can see, you know, if they're asking for the money, they're pretty much getting the money, but they're asking for way low. And then again, this is at McGill, and the amount requested and the amount awarded, it's showing the same kind of trends with females always asking for less. This is where it's the big toys come into play. The Canadian Foundation for Innovation is the source of funding for the big toys. And you can see the number that are applying for these. This is for Leaders Opportunity Grant, and this is actually funded because I wasn't allowed access to the numbers for those that applied. But the success rates are very high. At McGill, it's somewhere around 95%. So it's going to really pretty much reflect the ask. So again, there's a huge difference in terms of how much males versus females ask for, and in the different areas. Even in the arts and literature, there's not such a big difference, but there's very few that are doing that. And then the Leading Edge New Initiative, these are the huge grants. And there's a huge discrepancy. Even when the team is led by a female, they're always asking for less and getting less in all of the different, except for arts and literature. And it's discouraging that we at McGill are very similar in medicine and dentistry, where we have a lot of lofts. We're giving the opportunity primarily to males, and we need to improve and make sure that we're offering the same opportunity to females, because there's a quota to the university, and it's really driven at the level of the faculty. So that's an area where we have to work on. Now, when I was putting this data together, people said, oh, it's because there's differences in the number of males and females and different streams. And so I looked at the percentage that are female in the different faculties according to rank. And there certainly are differences at the professorial level. But there's less of a difference at the lower ranks, which is what you've heard already, that many times we're training, they get in the door, they get into being assistant professor, but then towards the full professor level, they start to fall off. And then that just shows the total faculty numbers. Now, in medicine, I want to see what the trend is, whether we're improving the situation. Are we getting towards more equal representation? And in the tenure stream, this is just in all the hires since 2007, so just in the last number of years. And the new hires are 41% have been female, which is terrific. In the contract academic, these are people who aren't on tenure stream, but they have a rolling contract, but they're primarily doing research. It's 45%. And for those that are doing primarily teaching, and these are clinicians that are out doing teaching our residents and our medical students, it's 55%, which is really terrific. And looking at the age, there is no difference. You know, you've heard this, how females take breaks from their careers to have families. It puts them back in time. There's no difference. The average age is very similar in all of the different faculties. In medicine, it's identical for whether it's assistant professor, associate professor, or full professor.
That's people who got those positions.
Right.
So there could be people that...
No, this is the full faculty. The age is absolutely identical.
Okay, but how would people who didn't get tenure say?
No, this is the full faculty. So it includes all of those people that are on the tenure stream and not on the tenure stream. So it's the full faculty that has that. So the main differences that I've observed is that the research areas really do differ in terms of where males and females prefer to do their research. And I think this is actually a good thing, because we do need females and that social perspective on, especially in medicine. And there's very similar data to that from Australia, although no one's ever commented on it. What is really surprising from this, although a lot of people suspected it, was that females perceive that they need less money to do the research. And interestingly, looking into this, when you look into childhood practices, parents actually usually expect males to learn how to manage their money from an early age. They have the paper route, where females... Parents often manage their money for them, feeling that they don't really need to know how to handle their money. The other thing is, too, that I found was that in terms of risk takers, just as in science where males are the risk takers, they also do it in banking, and they're the ones that are more likely to default on loans. So they take risks there as well. But one of the interesting things is you would think that we would be good at managing our money because more females than males manage the household budget. And that's pretty considerable dollars to be working with in many cases. Career paths, publications, hiring, these are can be really impacted, as you've heard, by either implicit or explicit gender influences. There's often a bias against females. You've heard that example already that Rima presented earlier. There was also, in the publication world, not so long ago, it was pointed out that 100% of some of the editorial boards are male. And that can have an impact on the kinds of papers they read and the value they put to them. But there's also a gender influence even in medicine. So in terms of joint replacements, males get them more frequently than females do because they're worth more in the society. And the orthopedic surgeons are now aware of that, and they're trying to come up with ways to address that. In cardiology, it was recognized for a long time that the standards of care in the past were actually based on research that was done on males only, but that's really improved. And that was a gender issue a number of years ago, but not less so now. Osteoporosis, it's the flip. It's not picked up very often in males because doctors don't think to look for it. And it's underdiagnosed. Even in innovation, it's actually important to have a gender perspective on things, but it's often not taken into account. This is this crash test dummy that Linda, which was designed by the Volvo Corporation, a female engineer, Laura Thackley, felt that it was important to have a test for someone who was pregnant. And so it came up with the design, which was really an innovative, I'm sure she had challenges from her colleagues to insist on that the dummy be created and tested. But there's needs to be much more of that. So although the research preferences vary, I think it's good to have a mix. A team approach where you have both the societal and the more math, science, engineering type, I think that's what you need to have that combined so that it tackles complex research problems. And awareness of the fact that females request less funding than male may actually help reverse that. And so I'm hoping that we'll get the message out. And I'm trying to let people know that females should always ask for more than they think they really need. I still don't know in terms of the toys, but I'm also a little suspicious that maybe we as females are better able to make maximal use of our research dollars than males do. But that's another hypothesis that has to be tested. But my final comment is sort of tongue-in-cheek, that when funds are scarce, it might be strategic to have more females involved. And I wanted just to thank Zena Sharman. There's an Institute of Gender and Health at CIHR that I've been going back and forth with, and they've been most helpful. And then at McGill, there are a number of people that helped me with the analysis. And if you want to do a really fun test about how your subconscious bias is for gender and science, the Harvard has this implicit demo that you can take this test yourself, and you can see whether you have an implicit bias.